Welcome to Leaders Making a Difference, the podcast that dives into the stories behind the changemakers. I'm your host, Jeannie Frazier, and together we'll have candid conversations that explore their challenges and celebrate their impact. Hi, and welcome to Leaders Making a Difference. We're here with changemaker and CEO Eric Barnaby of Peripherix. They're transforming how healthcare is delivered with easy in-home access, and you just don't get any easier than in-home. They've got innovation for eye care that gives accurate diagnostics and insights. And I'll be your host, Jeannie Frazier. I am president and CEO of Vitalink, and we help orgs escape the limiting healthcare sales loop. So let's step into the world of changemakers with Eric and Leaders Making a Difference to hear how their work is creating ripples in healthcare and how you might benefit. So good morning, Eric. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Jeannie. Thanks for having me.
Great. In a few sentences, can you tell us who you are, what you do, and really what inspires you about working in healthcare?
Sure. Well, my journey's been about 30 years now, in eye care particularly, and I've been able to enjoy seeing how healthcare and technology crosses all over the world in that time. I've worked in patient and doctor directly related activities. I've been in patient care. I've been in startups. I've been in large Fortune 100 companies, and I've been very lucky to live in places in, like Japan and Geneva, Switzerland, and be able to serve those areas. And throughout that time, the greatest thing you can do is see how technology makes lives better, makes doctors' lives better by making the diagnosis of patients easier, and really transforming a health system for the betterment of the patient. And that means faster diagnosis, better treatment, and better quality of life. So that's what keeps me coming back. I've loved eye care since I got into it as a teenager. And as much as I've strayed from it time to time over the years, I always seem to come back.
Wow. I love how you got your start on the healthcare giving side. How do you think that impacts your role as a CEO?
Well, it's always been helpful to have that in my back pocket. Very few people who come through the industry side have come through the patient side as well. They tend to come through sales or through other areas, and they end up in ophthalmology or optometry in some way. And they're always trying to guess and catch up, and they never have that full understanding of what it's like to see 70 patients in a day, be dead on your feet, and just wish someone would help you out. So when I started out, I was with a doctor who saw about 16 patients a day. We saw 8 in the morning, 8 in the afternoon. I was the first technician he had ever had. And at that point, he was in his late 50s, so you know, nearing the end of his private practice. And when I left him 2.5 years later, we had combined with several other physicians, and we were seeing 70 patients a day, 6 rooms per doctor, 2 techs each, and the technicians did everything. And so being able to sit with those patients and understand what their needs were, but at the same time, understanding what the practice requirements were. You know, we had this sandwich effect. We had to get in, talk to a patient, be kind and have a good bedside manner and still get everything done in 10 minutes because the doctor was coming behind you and he needed all the notes and he needed to see everything so he could produce that diagnosis and the next treatment plan. So I got a real appreciation for how hard it is to implement technology, implement better practice and process, while at the same time having a real empathy for the physicians who are trying to do the best they can under a system that's constantly saying, be better, be faster, be more efficient, because we're lowering the amount we're going to pay you because technology is coming in. And so it's always been that balance. And I've been able to carry that through. So whenever I've been in a position that's looking at, you know, say new technology in the future strategically, you already have in the back of your mind, all right, will that work? How is that making the doctor's life better? More importantly, is it going to make it right for the practice to attempt to implement that? Will they get paid for it? And so you just have a much more natural way of approaching this, and it makes things go a lot faster as well. So that's always been a real nice thing to have as far as my experience. And once doctors or other industry people know you have that and you can speak to it on that level, it's a level of credibility because you can say, I used to scope those patients. I know how the patient's going to react. Or that form function isn't quite right because elderly patients can't move this way or they don't want to do that. And it gives you that extra sense of confidence when you make those decisions going, I've been there, I've experienced it, I know what works and what won't. And if I'm not fully sure, I have a whole group of people I can ask that share a common experience. So sorry, very long-winded explanation, but I've always found it very valuable.
No, I love it. That's what we're here to learn, is kind of to peek behind the curtain and learn more about you. And, you know, Peripherex is a relatively new company, and you've talked about that patient side and how that's informed you. But there's also a great deal of technology Peripherex is using to transform how critical eye testing is delivered. So what do you think makes Peripherex technology different from what physicians have now? How does it improve their lives and the patients' lives?
Well, it's a great question, because this is actually an area of technology that has not made a leap forward in about 50 years. And if we look at every other function in healthcare or even home care, or just technology in general that we use every day, going 50 years without a big leap forward is kind of a strange concept. So if you look at the testing that's done today for glaucoma, that's done at the perimetry, the periphery of the patient's vision. And for AMD, it's done in the central portion, but those tests are done in machines that are very uncomfortable. They're basically big boxes with integrated half bowls on them, and the patient has to sit in a very specific way, and then they have to respond. And just that environment of a patient being brought into a room and trying to fit into this box, literally, and then trying to make sure they do well on the test, it's a tremendous amount of anxiety on that patient. So our company, Peripherex, was developed in part by a glaucoma doctor who said, you know what, patients hate this experience. And they hate it, and they delay it. And when they delay it, I don't get good information. You know, like anything else, data is king. And the more data points you have, especially for this type of test where it's all relative. Today's test is relative to the test last week, last month, last year. And you look at those in a whole set to understand where the patient's progression of disease is going, or if they've stabilized, because that directly informs the doctor's ability to say, hey, we may need to add a new drug, or you're great, keep going, or even worse, we've not been able to stabilize what's happening to you, it's time for more aggressive intervention, and that may be a surgery or a laser procedure. So getting this data on a regular basis has been extremely hard. Now you take the patient out of it for a minute, the physician has to put this machine in a room in his office, and then he has to staff it, and then he has to schedule around. And so it's kind of a sub practice within a doctor's practice. Now they've grown up with this. So to them, they go, yeah, well, we've always done it, so it's no big deal. But if you actually break that out and demonstrate to the doctor, hey, you're actually not making a lot of money on this test at all, and you're not getting enough data to make you truly effective at what you do best, why don't we rethink it? And so that was the basis of Peripherex. You know, if the doctor could get patients in more often to guarantee that data, because right now they do it about twice a year, and that's just not enough. There was a paper in ophthalmology back in 2017 that showed if you had these patients do this test weekly, even if they failed to do it, they were only 63% compliant. I mean, essentially, they miss every other test. They're still going to catch progression 2.5 years faster than the standard way they do this in the office.
So yeah, if they catch it 2.5 years faster, what does that do for your treatment and your vision?
Well, think about this. The patient has no idea those changes are happening, by the way, because their peripheral vision starts to come down and compress, but it doesn't happen at a rate that they really notice it. So unless you have an objective means to go, okay, what can we see? What is that retina experiencing? How is that visual optic nerve actually functioning? Then they just think everything's fine. And the doctor doesn't get any data to the contrary, so the doctor thinks it's fine. Yeah. And then a year later or 2 years in, they go, oh my God, there's been a change. Now we need to really do something. Well, you know, the body's a dynamic system. It will adapt to whatever's happening. So you let it go 2 years in a progressively worse state, that's terrible. You know, this patient may have had the opportunity of having a, say, simple outpatient laser procedure, been on their way and been fine. But now because there's so much progression that they didn't see and couldn't experience, now they have to do something either more drastic Or they have to explain to the patient, sorry we didn't catch this sooner, but there's nothing we can do to restore it.
That happened to my grandmother, actually. My grandmother had both glaucoma and cataracts, and they were able to operate on her cataracts, and she couldn't believe, like, all of a sudden how much clearer she could see in colors. But the glaucoma, I don't think she noticed as much. So she ended up being legally blind, so because they didn't catch it early enough.
Yeah, that is a tragically a common story around the world because it's the silent thief. Glaucoma is the type of disease that progresses, and the amount of pressure in the eye, this has been the discovery over the last 5-6 decades, the pressure doesn't have to be high enough to be painful. That's why patients don't notice it. So unless you have something called angle closure glaucoma, and that only happens roughly 10% of the patients who have glaucoma, you never feel that something's wrong. So they just continue to go on as if everything's fine. And it's only through these visual field tests that we discover it. But this was kind of a big change because we said, let's take this out of the office. Let's increase the efficiency for the doctor. Let's get rid of the staff and the dedicated space and find a way for the general number of patients that he sees with glaucoma to have a better experience. So now he gets better data and he doesn't have to worry about some of those office issues. But now the patient can actually have a much more comfortable experience. They can do the test like you and I just sitting right here in front of our computers. And yeah, they'll need to block one eye when they can do it with a patch, a spoon, or their finger. But if you asked any of these patients, would you rather sit at your desk or your couch or your living room or dining room table and do this than drive, you know, half an hour, maybe an hour to the office, sit, wait, go through this test, sit, get the result, clear, you go home. It's a huge mess in their day. We've heard some people say, oh, well, elderly people like to get out. No, they don't. Talk to them. They hate going for these things. They want to go out.
Not
they
for
go
that. To lunch yeah.
Yeah.
They like to get out, but not necessarily for that kind of thing. So, all right. So the geek in me, I was reading that there was some learning from other industries, which sort of inspired this innovation. So kind of someone looked at the gaming world and how it worked. So tell me a little bit about that. So the geek in me first, the patient side is so important and I love to hear that. But now the geek in me is like, ooh, how did this influence, you know, that innovation?
Absolutely. What's that old quote, right? Artists copy, geniuses steal. So when Dr. Goldberg figured out the type of test that needed to happen to understand the function and what's going on with the patient, that was just the first step. Because in this at-home atmosphere, you can't control for some of these very important variables. You know, what position is the patient's head in? Can you see where their eyes are moving? How close are they to the screen? What's the lighting like in front of you, behind you? And without controlling for those variables, he couldn't get a program that was really accurate and repeatable. So this is very frustrating. But he said, if I could just track those parameters, it would be so much easier. So he started looking around and doing some searching in the tech industry. And oddly enough, there was a gaming company who had all these patents around tracking eyes and head and position to relation to the screen for a better first gamer experience. You know, first player as you're in a virtual reality situation. And by combining these together, Dr. Goldberg and the founder of that company were now able to create a system that tracked for all those variables. So we had to reach outside what we knew in the basic technology that we'd been going down on a path in this area for 50 years and just reach outside to something that was already developed. And you had to open up a little bit and go, where are the adjacencies here? Who's really doing what it is I need to be more effective? And the thing is, healthcare has always benefited from this. If you look in eyes alone, the device that most doctors use to remove cataracts today, overwhelmingly, actually came from the dental industry. So it was an inspiration because the doctor was in the dental chair trying to figure out a technology to take out a cataract. And so he adapted it. And this is, again, you know, 40 plus years ago. But now it's so efficient and it's so good that it's the number one surgery performed in the world and it's the safest. Wow. So always looking outside and looking for those tech adjacencies has made huge differences. And I've been lucky to experience a couple of them in eye care.
Well, that creativity is amazing. And so, since I have a family history of glaucoma, and glaucoma is the leading cause of irreversible blindness, and you know, people don't necessarily know there's an issue, it's so important. Like, who is most at risk for glaucoma? And who, if they're watching this, should think, oh my gosh, I should get a test or I should go in? I mean, I know this isn't necessarily related to your product yet, but who needs to be worried about this?
Well, it's funny because it's actually directly related. This is one of the things that most people don't realize. A family history is a good indicator if you have what they call open-angle glaucoma or POAG, even if you have ocular hypertension, which is often shortened to OHT. That's the precursor to patients who have glaucoma. But really, anyone over the age of 40 should be screened yearly. That's kind of the cutoff age. That's where the flow inside the eye can either be restricted, causing pressure to go up, or for whatever reason, you can be producing too much of this fluid. And again, you're overwhelming the system of the eye, and so the pressure goes up. But those are the things that happen as we age. So anyone over 40 should have this test done. Certainly anyone who has a family history should be checking to see if they have glaucoma, because there are some genetic markers that pass down. And that's an industry that has really developed over the last few years. There's some good tests coming to the market now to help people look genetically to see if they're predisposed to this glaucoma particular disease. So there are some indicators there, but just some basic screening that can happen for everybody is going to be key to identifying these earlier. And early diagnosis is absolutely key. If you can even see if you're predisposed or you get tested yearly for this at minimum, you can catch it before that vision impact takes place, and you have a lot more choices. The longer you wait, the less choices you have, as with most disease.
Yeah, and we all want more choices with that, especially when it comes to protecting our vision. You know, so I'm also a diabetic, so I know that's also can be another risk factor. And taking a look at that, you know, there are certain populations who are more at risk for diabetes and those types of things. So if you're looking at, you know, people of color or, you know, different groups, they should really think about this as well. This is something that would be important for them.
Definitely, definitely. And as you said, there's that combination where patients who are diabetic do tend to have a higher predisposition to glaucoma. And this really affects African-American men and African men more than any other group. And there's a confluence of factors there. But what we love about what we've developed at PerifraX is now you don't have to take people out of their daily routines. You don't have to create this, you know, big issue to try and get a test done. You can provide this simply to their home, to their work, wherever they are, wherever they have a computer and a camera. And now they can do this test. And for all groups, what we found is being able to provide access means earlier diagnosis. So for groups that say, you know what, I can't take time off to do this test. Don't take time off. Great, do it at home. But we'll still get that quality. We'll still find that marker that says, okay, you're safe, or you should really have a follow-up to do this. So especially those groups that are underrepresented, this is the type of technology that's going to provide access and level the playing field, because they don't have to go and they don't have to change their lifestyle in order to do it.
And this tech would then go straight to their doctor for their doctor to be able to keep an eye on, right?
Exactly. And that is absolutely key. Too many times we've seen tech gurus trying to come into the healthcare space, and they have the greatest of intentions and great inventions. The problem is they tend to cut the doctor out because they see the doctor as the big bad guy in healthcare who's causing all the price increases, you know, doctors and drug companies. And to be fair, to a certain percentage, sometimes that's true. But the reality is, unless you work within the healthcare system and you work with the doctor as that key provider, the patient can't follow on. So in this case, we work through the physician. So he has a patient that's coming to him or her, and in some cases, they'll have the patient do this test first before they get to the office, or sometimes they'll have them do it after. And for patients with glaucoma, they can do it routinely. So you have more opportunity here to still get this done, but it doesn't have to be inconvenient.
And to know how urgent it would be for you to potentially get care that could be life-changing. That's just great. I love that. So we talked about glaucoma a little bit. What other eye issues does Peripherex help or do you screen for?
Well, today we're starting in the glaucoma space, but we do have a pipeline and development underway to look at what we call microperimetry. And this is for patients with macular degeneration, or even for patients who have been on Plaquenil for, say, rheumatoid arthritis or some other things that can have some vision impact. But the macular degeneration one is probably the other most exciting one we have, because growing number of patients, and it's an aging disease, unfortunately, macular degeneration, and the only way to fight it right now is injections. But you don't know how often to get them. You don't know when to start them. There you go. You know this.
Being a diabetic, I'm also already on the injection path. And boy, I'd love to be able to find out that I don't have to have it as often as I do, because getting a shot in the eye, not fun, but better than blindness. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the old adage. It's better than going blind, right?
Yeah.
But to your point, it's that confidence of knowledge. So if you take the test and the tests show that you're stable and don't need an injection, you're thrilled because you're stable. Your vision's good. You don't need to go through that process. And you know the doctor knows that too. On the flip side to that, if you are showing progression and there is something you do need to do to step in and intervene, like you said, you're happy to have the shot because you know you need it. But if you don't,
get to it quicker. Thrilled. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's that power of data and knowledge that, again, it's in these areas that we haven't always put up front, but are now coming to the fore to say, hey, if we just had a little more data on this, we'd make better decisions and we'd have a lot more confidence as a physician. And the patient's anxiety is going to go way down because they know they're intervening because they have to, not because, you know, the clinical study said you should do this every 7.5 months and that works for most people. And if I'm in the bell curve, then that's great. No, the data is going to be really tailored to you and to how your body's going through this disease progression. So that's the other key benefit, is we find it starts to tailor make a doctor's treatment regimen for each patient, because he can do it exactly on the data and as it's changing over time. And it's a huge, huge weapon that they can
I can
use.
See so much, because I know I've gone into the doctor before and they'll say, well, there's no fluid, but we want to give you a shot anyway, just to make sure. And then maybe next time we can go longer in between. It sounds like with this, if you're able to do more testing, it's not as much of a question mark. So maybe I wouldn't have had to get that extra shot. And I would know whether I needed to get back in within the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 5 weeks, depending on my results.
Couldn't have said it better. And if you look at why doctors don't do more testing, it's because either the patient avoids it or it takes up so much time. This microperimetry test, if you do it in the office, takes 45 minutes to do. Never mind travel time and the appointment time.
Yeah.
We can collapse
that. And it's hard
to
find doctors. I mean, there's not a ton of specialists in my area, you know, and they're booked, you know, so it's hard. And when I have an appointment, I'm at that doctor no less than 2 hours. And the great doctor, I love her. She's wonderful. But it takes, I mean, in addition to that, you're dilated. So you lose half a day. And, you know, that's hard for someone who's working to be able to lose that much time that often. So to be able to test at home, just sign me up. Where do I get this?
Right. And you think of the trade-off you're giving the patient. Come in and do this regular test. It takes 45 minutes. You maybe do it once a month or every 2 months. Or stay home and just do it for 5 minutes once a week. I mean, it's just not even a contest. But you hit on something else that's really great too, is there's a shortage of operating physicians in eye care these days. So there's 14,000 ophthalmologists roughly that can do procedures. And that number is not growing. In fact, it's shrinking over time because of the difficulties that, you know, people have with breaking in, the educational levels. And then they see the compression, both of reimbursement, but also higher insurance rates. All of those things are pushing people more to the medical side. So the number of doctors who can actually intervene is growing smaller. But we have this huge network, 40,000 plus optometrists who are quite good at diagnosing things using testing and seeing patients at the front line. So we view technology like this as the natural progression here of the industry to say, you know what, the guys who need to cut and do lasers and do things like that, let's save their time to do vision saving work.
And I'm just thinking, isn't the equipment that they would use to get a similar sort of answer, albeit not as good, isn't it pretty expensive? And it, like you said, it takes a technician for it, a whole room, which is, again, money, money, money for the doctor.
Exactly. And so they got to find a place for it. And people often forget that, yes, it's the gold standard, but it's going to cost you for the top of the line machine somewhere between $80,000 and $100,000. Wow. And even for a fairly cheap, faster machine that's still in your office, it can still run you 10 to 20 plus service fees each year to maintain it. Plus, you got to have someone run it. And you look at all these and you go, well, there's that other reason why doctors don't push this testing enough. It's a pain. It costs them. And then on reimbursement, they only get reimbursed really twice a year to do them. So every time they do that, they assume all of the cost of that overhead and they're not getting paid.
So then they have to see more patients to be able to break even.
Exactly.
And it's a nasty cycle.
Yeah, it's part of the hidden cost because they just accept we have to do this test. We've always done this test. I learned this test in school. And then the papers say we have to do it. But if you really integrate it as part of the regular treatment or part of the regular visit that a patient does from home, now you take all of that block away. And now you're getting good data. And the way we've developed our system is there's a patient portal and a physician portal. And the patient can get some of those results. How well was the test done? Did it go through to their doctor? Compared to their last test. And then the doctor gets the real detailed analytics. And we're continuing to build that up beyond what's in the industry already because doctors want to set things to be easy. So in this case, they can set flag warnings for these patients to say, okay, of all the points of vision that we test, if one of them changes by 5%, I want to know. If one of them changes by 2%, I want to know. And so they can quickly go through and look at these in their portal and go, no changes, no changes, no changes. There's a flag. Okay, that one I'm going to look at. Maybe I have that patient come in. Maybe I ask them to just do it again at home just to confirm. And think about how fast that would be. If it looks bad and it's in the office, you've got to call that patient and bring them back. And it may be for no reason. So by being able to speed this up and confirm that data in a convenient location, you're going to get better data just to work with and treat those patients. And the patients will love it.
Wow, that's using AI for good.
Exactly.
So Eric, we've talked about how easy this is to use and the data points that it brings and how much better it makes the doctor's ability to be able to diagnose things early and treat them early so that they're not irreversible. So I hear all this and I'm thinking, wow, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. But how much is it going to cost me? Like, is this talk about that? Like, so is this a big cost to the patient, to the doctor, what is that?
Great question. That's usually the greatest killer of innovation in healthcare is we can't figure out how to pay for it. And the worst thing that can ever happen is getting branded as a golden scalpel, something that's clearly better, but not better enough to get paid more. So here's the issue. How do you get people to do this more? Generally, the tech guys will tell you, put everyone on a subscription. People will buy it. People will do this. And the simple answer in healthcare is no, they won't, especially people, over 65 who've put into the system over time. They now have Medicare. They have a Part B coverage. They have these private insurances. They don't view healthcare as free, but they're certainly not going to pay for it themselves if they think it's owed to them. And that's the way the system's built. So the second most important component of keeping the doctor involved is being able to operate within the system as it's built. So finding a way to get coverage. And we're very proud of the fact that we were able to do that. And so there's no acquisition cost to the physician because this is an app. This is a SaaS model. So he doesn't have to pay anything up front. The patient pays nothing other than what may be required by their insurance when they do tests. And for us, we've built out this model that allows us to work with the doctor so that they pay a very small component of what they make. So for us, it worked out really well. The physician is not going to be out of pocket in the beginning. We have them pay for that privilege of using the system and getting more data, but financially it makes better sense to them. And there's nothing up front. There's no yearly service fees. So financially, we've made it very easy for doctors to adapt to this in their practice.
So there's no big like $50,000 to $100,000 cost for this new equipment, having to pay for a person to staff the equipment, having to have, you know, what could be, you know, a room to see patients in. None of that is needed. They have a low cost for your product, no, very low entry. They still make some money on it. So this is still something that's good, and it gives better care to the patients, and it's not really going to cost the patients anything more than what any other kind of treatment would.
Exactly.
Okay. So like I said, incredibly creative on the back end of making it usable.
You know, you hit on a really great point too. You know, technicians right now, there's a huge technician shortage in the US. And that's because, you know, the pandemic created some of it, but also pay scales and the compression of payments on the medical industry itself has made it hard to find, train, and keep really good technicians. Now, the industry is actually part of that problem, because whenever we find a really good technician, especially ones that knows our equipment or our program or whatever, we tend to steal them from practices. So we exacerbate the problem, admittedly. You know, what did Taylor Swift say? Hi, it's me. I'm the problem. We do that. However, this not only helps a doctor reduce costs, but he takes the technician out of it. And that is a huge step for them, because they're already shorthanded just seeing their regular patients. They're already shorthanded on tests that can't be done without a technician. And so the doctors are finding themselves either having to jump in and do some basic testing on their own, which honestly, they don't have time for by the way they build their schedules, or they have to keep training new people. So the more we can use technology to eliminate, you know, staff having to do things that don't require them, it's actually better for everybody. It alleviates that pain point in the practice and for the doctor himself.
So they're still going to need those technicians, but the technicians can be doing more valuable things that really do require their skills instead of having to have both things.
And the paperwork alone, and I just had my own yearly exam a few weeks ago, and sadly, not a lot has changed since the last time I was a technician way too many years ago. We still have to do a lot of that paperwork. And now it's more about making sure that you've documented things properly. Otherwise, insurances won't pay. You've got to do some additional testing in the office prior to the doctor doing his diagnosis so that he can check the box that, yes, he also looked at these parameters as well as those as the standard. So there's a lot of that administrative work that the techs still need to do, and you still need a knowledgeable worker to interact with the patient to do. So we love what we've built, because we said, hey, you know what? Having someone sit in a room and just press the button to say go on this test and then wait till it's done and tell the patient to, you know, pull back from the machine, that's not value add. That's not driving additional payments or value to the office. So let's eliminate that. Let's keep them focused on things that bring value and then help the doctor's life to be better.
Wow. So thinking about this, you know, I'm sure a lot of people who are older might need to use this technology. How easy is it to use? Could someone who's like not tech savvy be able to conduct this test themselves?
Absolutely. And that's the way it's built, was to be very intuitive. And it speaks in a loud voice. So having a speaker on there helps, but it prints in words the absolute directions of what to do. So if a patient has email, they can operate this test, because they click the link, it brings them to the site, register their information, and then it says in a big bar, take the test. And then they have to use, you know, a business card or credit card at some point just to hold up to the screen to understand what the pixel resolution is. And then they stare into the camera to register their eyes and their head, and they don't have to do anything stressful. The system automates all of it. So as long as they can follow direction, it goes pretty quick. And what we love about the function of the test is we gamified it. You know, not did we just track it, but we increased the usability. So the old test, the patient would have to stare at a spot right in the middle of the screen, and they get tired, and they're waiting for these other dots to appear, and then they have to push a button. Well, you get a lot of false positives, false negatives. The test would stop because the patient's moving around and looking around. With our tracker in place, we're able to test a wider field of vision because we move that center point around. And so yeah. when a new
it's stimulus, hard to keep your eyes in that same spot.
It is, and your eyes would dry out. It was such a pain. It's one of the things patients hated. But with the test target moving around, every time you see one of those stimulus lights, that becomes the new center target. So you're basically chasing that little white light around the screen, and that's what also makes it go faster. So
it's recognizing just by how it works your eye movement. So
exactly.
you're not
every
having
time
to
the
depart.
Eye moves, it registers.
It's perfect. The machine yep. does that.
The machine does it, and the patient doesn't have that anxiety of, oh, did I hit it? Did I miss it? Am I late? Did I push the button right? No, don't worry about it. You see that little white light, look at it. Okay, you see another one, go look at it. And then things move, and it's really a great innovation.
So talk to me about in technology, kind of the safety of your health information. So is it shared with anybody else? Is it just your doctor? Do you have control of that?
Control and patient data. I mean, that is central and core to so many debates right now, right? So the FDA finally caught up. You know, their new programs and guidelines came out recently within the last 6 months, and it has really been a game changer. So FDA cybersecurity, well above and beyond what the HIPAA requirements were, has really made it so you have to make sure this information is secure. So we run on HIPAA compliant and FDA cybersecurity compliant servers. So number one, we've done that. Number two, we don't share that data with anyone other than the doctor, but we do use it to, you know, improve the algorithms and do other things, but it's completely de-identified at that point. So we're not able to trace back, and there's no leaks that you're going to find and no big breaks there because of those requirements that are in place. That includes not just where the servers are, how they're protected, who gets access to these, and that's recorded, and then the responsibilities of those people have to be confirmed. So the data is ultra, ultra protected. And frankly, we don't ask for a lot of personal information anyway. That's number one. Never ask for things you don't need. And that way, you're not worried about things getting out.
Well, I heard the word FDA, and I noticed on your website, and it's at peripherex.com, we'll put it up on the screen, that you're now FDA registered for at-home monitoring. So what does that mean?
Well, we are registered with the FDA as a Class 1 device, which is the same as those in-office units. And that means we are able to perform the tests and provide the results, and the physician actually makes the decision on what to do with those results. But our registration required that we do a study of patients to say, did this work? Did it operate at a high enough level of confidence to say that it's useful? And did it meet those parameters? And yes, it did. We'll be publishing that study data shortly. We did a little press release on some of the top line data, which was very, very good about the sensitivity and repeatability, which is what most doctors are concerned about. But that allows us now to go into the home. And we worded it that way, actually, because that's our focus. We want to make sure people are doing this at home, remotely, on vacation, wherever they are. But the registration actually allows us to do it in an office, too, if we wanted. But we're going to see the majority of the value and the usage outside of the office. So it's a very broad registration, and we're very proud of it. And we're looking at ways of going beyond that, perhaps into Class 2 and some of those other device areas as we build data and able to make claims against it. But we are FDA registered.
So if someone's looking at this podcast and they think, wow, gosh, you know, I'd like to be able to get tested like that, how do they get it? And will it be covered by insurance? And, you know, how do they go about finding out more?
The simplest way is go through their physician. This is something that doctors we're working with now in pilots. And the pilots that we're operating are not for the technology to say, does this work? We've already proven that. But anytime you get into a practice and you start seeing how different practices operate, you want to be sure that you can adapt quickly so that the next practice wants to adopt it. They see the benefit, they see the value, and you can answer their questions as you go in from an operational perspective. So we're going to be doing pilots over the next couple of months and then launching more broadly in the US and probably Canada later this year. So patients just need to ask their doctor, and the doctor will be the leader and be able to put them on the system.
That's great. So What are maybe some common misconceptions people might have that you can kind of clue us in on?
Well, the biggest one is that we do this all on our own. Whenever you have a new technology or something that's very different, they're always a little skeptical. You know, we learn this in the genetics side as well, because you hear horrible stories of 23andMe releasing data or some other app on the phone. Oh, just do this and we'll tell you about your eyesight. But they're not really connected to anything. And so people are understandably skeptical about us as the company and how we operate. But the fact is, we were developed by a glaucoma specialist. He understands what patients need, and we've continued to develop this with some of the top glaucoma specialists in the country to see how do we make this better? How do we make sure we comply to all these guidelines? And by being that connector with the doctor, we both put our reputations together. So we don't want to embarrass the doctor. So we're going to do things that make things easier for him, but also never something he has to apologize for. And that's a big key. You look at guys like several years ago, you had Jeff Bezos and Jamie Dimon and Warren Buffett come together and say, we're going to change healthcare. And they had all these great tech ideas and these great financial ideas. But the one thing they kept forgetting is how the health system works and how the patients need the doctors to be engaged. And actually, if you start there, your product has a much greater chance of being successful and adopted because they understand it's for them. If you come from that other side and from that, you know, tech or finance side, sometimes you can miss those elements that will make the difference for a doctor deciding whether or not to use this.
Wow. So your approach, you've got that start on the patient side of it, understanding of business knowledge, you've got the glaucoma specialist and people who also get how a medical practice operates and the business side of it. You know, so it sounds like you've really been thoughtful on developing this product so that it's useful and it can get in the hands of those people who benefit from it the most to be able to protect their eyesight. So, you know, just brilliant. I love it. So we've learned a lot today, but maybe what's one question I should have asked of you that our audience needs to know?
Oh, goodness. That is a tough one. I'd say the one thing about me that people tend not to know, but I just enjoy the challenge. So I've always looked at things that are going to move the industry forward, are going to be exciting. And you've got to not be able to see around the corner, as people say, but just see things that sometimes aren't there. And there's another great quote that, you know, being talented is being able to hit the target. Being genius, and I'm not counting myself as a genius, but being a genius is being able to see a target others don't see. And when we start to put these things together, it's about being able to look down the future with your experience and go, but where are things changing? Where are things going? Why do they need to go there? And if we looked at this company from a pure technological component, we wouldn't do it because the tech already exists in other places. But now you look at the tech component, the patient need, how the doctors need to operate in those environments all together, and now it makes the path really clear. So that's what I've really enjoyed doing in my career. Similarly, when I went to Japan, there was a product issue, and it was not easy, and that was probably some of the hardest years of my life working through that and rebuilding trust with the company and the physicians. But there was a path through, and as long as you could continue to see the path through, you could get there. Same thing in Europe. We weren't performing very well. And it was just getting the team to understand that as long as we can get through this period, there is a path forward. And, you know, within a couple of years, we got back to number one in that region for those particular lenses. So that's the thing I've always enjoyed. And I don't tend to tout it, but I love the challenge, sometimes to my own demise.
Well, you know, I'm glad there are people out there who like a challenge like you, who have brought this kind of innovation to market and done the work to get it, you know, to get it there. Name of this podcast is Leaders Making a Difference, and I don't think that it's more applicable than, you know, in this instance here. And I really hope that what we've talked about today will help our listeners, because knowledge is power and you will have more control over your healthcare with this product, which is great, and more access, which makes it better. I mean, we need to be able to make sure that people have access to tools. So if you'd like to learn more about it, visit peripherx.com. If you'd like to learn more about VitalLink, you can visit treatmentaccelerator.com. And I would invite you to join us again on Leaders Making a Difference as we share stories of other change makers. So thank you, Eric, today. This has been great.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jeannie.
Have a great day, everyone.